Hey guys, and welcome to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. The first podcast to bring you the local fishing report for Alabama's lakes and rivers, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. I'm your host, Nick Williams, and this week's show is brought to you by... Alrighty guys, welcome back to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report. Summer is here, it's hot and sticky, but we got a hot fishing report coming in this week. We got first up, we're going to have Justin Dunham down here on the Mobile Tensaw Delta. Justin, what you been up to?
Hey Nick, thanks for having me. Been doing some inshore fishing and took a break from that this past weekend, and we had a bass tournament, the Mobtown Bass Club, and we went up to Jackson, Alabama, and fished at Parker Lake.
Well, that sounds like a good time, man. The inshore thing sounds fun. Parker Lake sounds fun. How'd you do? How'd everybody do up there?
Well, a lot of us caught fish, but they just didn't have a whole bunch of size to them. We couldn't quite get the big ones figured out. But it was a good bite early. I caught several on top water on a popper, and I was targeting the edge of trees that had aquatic vegetation growing out from them. And I would hit that popper a few times around the edge of that vegetation, and you'd have to just let it sit for 3 to 10 seconds, and they would just come up and slurp it. And that bite went on pretty good until about 8 o'clock. And after 8 o'clock, it slowed down to nothing. And I had to get the soft plastics out there and skip them way in that vegetation and kind of just reel it really fast through the top of it and just kill it right there at the edge. And I think those fish were tracking that bait as it would come through that vegetation, and they followed it out and they were smoking it, but they just didn't have a whole lot of size to them. Just couldn't get the big one figured out, but it was fun.
It sounds like a good time. I just got through proofing. We got an article coming out in the August issue of Great Days Outdoors talking about topwater bass fishing, and man, that is some of my favorite fishing, is when you can get them to hit a popper. Were you throwing that popper on a fly rod or just on some conventional tackle?
Well, it was conventional. It's a walking popper. So if you're familiar with like the old Rebel Pop R, it's that style, but it's made by Shimano. It's their World Pop. And it has a reflective sheet inside of it, and it's held up by two springs. And whenever you pop it, that reflective sheet shimmers back and forth. So even while it's sitting still, that little sheet in there is moving and it's reflecting, and it kind of makes it look like that bait's quivering. And it'll actually draw a lot of fish just sitting still because that sheet on there. It's becoming my favorite popper. I don't get any kickback from Shimano or anything. The popper just really works.
That sheet sounds interesting. Tell me one more time, what's the name of that lure?
It's a Shimano World Pop. I think it's a 75F, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And it's Flash Boost is that reflective sheet. They've got a whole line of lures that have the Flash Boost. They've got a jerk bait, a glide bait, a couple of the top waters. I've got a wake bait that has it. It's pretty neat, but I think the best use of the Flash Boost is in that popper and in their suspending jerk baits.
That's definitely interesting. I got it pulled up right now. That's bad thing about hosting the show is I end up with a bunch of lures bookmarked that I then have to explain to my wife at the end of the month. So I'm going to have to check that one out because I love a topwater bite. So,
they're $20 a piece. So you got to save your lunch money a little bit buy too many of them.
Is that one of them that if it ends up in the bushes, it has to come back out? No negotiations.
Oh yeah, you gotta send the dive team in after it.
Man, I took a guy fishing, and he was fly fishing, and he had these big, beautiful, intricately tied streamers, articulated streamers, and he was throwing them. We got up in Globe Creek, and he threw that fly up into a branch, and when he went to jerk on it, you just watched. There was a red wasp nest about the size of a basketball. And when he jerked, you could hear them buzzing from like 20 yards out. Like they were like, hey, don't, they were telling him, don't do that again. Don't jerk our limb. And he just looked at me and he said, what do we do? And I was like, dude, you just might have to break off. And he's like, man, that's an expensive fly. And I'm like, well, look, here's the deal. Like, I'll go motor over to the far bank and you can go swim for it. But we're not doing that. I've done that before.
Yeah.
Some
Yes,
point you have to
you
draw
gotta
the
decide
line.
how valuable that is.
But I have climbed a few trees and done a little bit of impromptu wading to go get a lure back that, like you said, some of them get pretty pricey. Some of the big like them big jointed swim baits. I think I saw some of those the other day in Bass Pro Shops, and it was like a $60 swim bait. I was like, Lord have mercy.
Oh yeah, those big glide baits. I think they start like a cheap one's going to be about $35, and I mean, some of them they go up to like $1,000. You know, if you want to get that fancy with them, I can't
Oh yeah.
afford those, but
No,
they do get pricey.
even at $60, I'm not ashamed to admit that I got some rod and reel combos sitting on my rack that cost more than that lure cost. So
Yeah. Oh yeah.
well, man, let's backtrack for just a second real quick. Tell me a little bit about, you said you were doing some inshore fishing. I know this is a freshwater report, but a lot of the guys that come down here to the Delta, maybe freshwater guys, but they like to try their hand on it. How'd you do?
So I've been doing really good with flounder. It seems to me like if you're a decent finesse bass fisherman, like if you can worm a plastic worm, you know, on the bottom and just kind of scooch it, you're tailor-made for flounder fishing. So if anywhere from about like the Theodore Industrial Canal area south, any of those little creek mouths and drains, anytime water flowing across those, you just take a straight-tailed plastic like a fluke or a Z-Man jerk shad or an unfair smack tail and put some ProCure on it, put it on like an eighth or a 16th ounce jig head and throw it in those creek mouths when they've got water running through them, depending on the tide, and just kind of slowly hop them along or hop them along grass lines at creek mouths. And that seems to be a really good way to get flounder.
I would the little bit of inshore fishing that I've done in the past, I would agree with what you said there to start, that if you can finesse fish on the bottom for bass, you can catch flounder. That's a really good way to put it. For anybody who's up there coming down with the family, do a little vacation. That's Justin, I think you really nailed it. And what's fun, like you were talking about, how they get up in the creeks and stuff like that here in the summer when there's not a lot of water pushing down. Like, it'll surprise you how far upstream in a lot of these waterways you can get salty enough water to have your inshore species. So it's very, I think now is a good time of the year to come do that, because especially if you're kayak fishing, like, you don't really have to get out that far in the big water. You can stay in some pretty protected waters and get on some pretty good fishing this time of the year.
Oh yeah, absolutely. A lot of places you can catch fish like right by the launch because you know the boaters they'll motor up and run on past it. But a lot of those creek mouths and drains, you know, the fish migrate in and they just kind of hang out there. And like you say, they migrate up a long ways.
They do. And what you talk about fishing around the boat ramp. So I am circling back. I for years was a paddler. I bought my first boat, and you get that boat and you're sick of fishing right there by the boat ramp, within a mile or two of the ramp. So you want to go, or if you're bank fishing, you're sick of fishing right there with people coming and going. But what I've found out is exactly what you said. A lot of times it's not as pressured around the dock as you think, because everybody wants to get away from the dock. Same thing hunting on the WMAs. I found a lot of times you can kill a lot of deer within 200 yards of a parking area because everybody wants to get away from their truck. Nobody wants to hunt where they can look back and see their truck and see people loading and unloading. But you can take advantage of something like that in a kayak. You don't necessarily have to kill 2 hours paddling out into the backwater to go get on a good bite.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'd like to say that's hidden in plain sight.
That's it, right there under your nose, like people backing trailers
Yeah.
in over the top of them, and they're just sitting there hanging out. So, and I've seen kids catch some really big fish doing that because that's all they can do, especially up here at like Live Oak Landing and down on the causeway. You'll see some kid fishing off the ramp, and then next thing you know, that old spinning reel that his mom and dad got him from Walmart on the way down here, all of a sudden it's doubled over and the drag's just blowing smoke off of it, and a big bull redfish done took off, and nobody knows what to do. They just handed him the rod to keep him quiet, and there he is hooking up on fish. So,
Right.
well, last time you was on the show, you was talking to me a little bit about a Bassmasters tournament. Is there any new news on that?
Yes, sir. Actually, just say they've got the Tourney X link made for signups, and that is the Bassmaster Bass Nation Kayak Series. It's a branch of that. they're trying to get an Alabama shoot of that going on the state side. And the way that'll work is there are three clubs from Alabama that do the kayak bass fishing, and they were chosen to host a state championship qualifier. And Mobtown Kayak Bass Fishing, which is Mobile's kayak bass group, was chosen as one of those. So if anybody's interested in that, that will be July 27th. And the entry fee is pretty low. The entry fee is only $25. But to sign up for it, you'll need to be a member of BASS. I know a lot of people already are. And then you'll need to be a Bass Nation member, which that's only $30. So it's really not too expensive to sign up for it. And if you're able to do well in it, you'll qualify for the Alabama State Championship. And then if you do well in that, you'll be able to qualify for the Bassmaster Kayak Bass Nation Championship, which is the same stage as the Bassmaster Classics on. So that's pretty cool.
That is very cool. And I'm looking on the Mobtown Kayak Bass Fishing Facebook page. It looks like here just an hour ago, looks like you put that information up. So if anybody's looking to sign up, Justin's made it easy for you. You can check it out on the Mobtown Kayak Bass Fishing page. Yeah, that looks like a really cool opportunity. And I'm looking at some of these boat launches on here that are right here out in my backyard. So I might have to check that out. I just picked me up a new kayak and I wouldn't mind trying some of the tournaments. So that may be a big one to jump into feet first, but I ain't scared. I'll pay some money and join.
Oh, there you go.
Good deal.
Well,
I
we
know.
hope you sign up, and we tried to. We're not sure how many people to anticipate for this. So it originally was at Hurricane Landing, but we opened it up kind of to the entire Delta. You know, in case a lot of people sign up for it, we wouldn't be constricted by the space at Hurricane Landing. But really, anywhere from the Causeway north to about an hour, we listed every launch. You know, pretty much on the west and east side that you'd be able to use within an hour's drive, and how much of a launch fee, if there is one, that's associated with those ramps.
Yeah, it looks like everything from the Causeway all the way up to Holly Creek, like what you said, that's a pretty good ways up there. That's really the last ramp until you get up to Monroe County, since they don't have that ramp up there. What's the name of it? The one that used to be up there by the little catfish eatery.
Oh, I know the one you're talking about. I was never able to launch at it.
I was just talking to somebody about it the other day. We were up there for years. We were in Little River Hunting Club, my dad and I, and we would go there after a hunt, and we'd stop and get a meal, and same way. Like I used to, I can't tell you how many meals I ate looking out there at the water, and we just never launched a boat there. We was always up there to deer hunt. But yeah, Holly Creek's a pretty land, and everything south of it, and everything that I'm looking at here, you got Steel Creek, Gunnison, Bates Lake, Busby's, Mount Vernon, Cedar Creek, Rice Creek, which is just right there, Upper Bryant's, which I could throw a rock and hit, Hubbard's. So there's a lot of good fishing. I see you got the old French Lake landing there. Yeah, that looks like a good time. I'm gonna have to check that out. And then I know I got an unfair advantage because I know there's a guy got a pretty good YouTube channel here local about catching fish. So I can always binge watch those and log that as work hours if I just stick a Great Days Outdoors sticker on my kayak when I fish. I'd call it a networking expense.
There you go.
There we go. Well, yeah, guys, definitely if you
There.
listen in, go check out the Mobtown Kayak Bass Fishing page. And Justin, tell everybody one more time about that YouTube channel you got, because I've got a kick out of watching them videos here for the past summer.
Yes, sir. It's 8 Mile Drifter. That's spelled out EIGHT, and I think it's spaced between 8 Mile and Drifter.
Yep,
But
there.
yeah, I try to upload at least once a week. Sometimes if life gets too busy, I may skip a week, but I try to do once a week.
Well,
It's been a lot of fun editing and making videos.
I definitely enjoy watching them, guys. Y'all go check it out if you want to see somebody who fishes here local on the Delta. And Justin, good luck. Be safe out on the water, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by. Alrighty, guys, welcome back. This time we're talking with Chris Martin with Daiwa. Chris is a field marketing specialist. He's here today to talk to us about bait finesse systems. I know we've talked about them a couple times in the past on the show, I know Justin Dunham down here on the Mobile Tensaw Delta, he's talked about fishing for crappie with a BFS reel. I believe Taylor Hara has probably talked with us a time or two about fishing out around Southwest Alabama, excuse me, Southeast Alabama. We had a couple of listeners reach out and they were asking, hey, tell me more about this BFS stuff. So the stars aligned. I ended up with a BFS reel in my hand. I ended up with Chris's phone number. He generously agreed to be on the show. So, Chris, welcome to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Thanks, Nick. I work as a Daiwa's field marketing specialist, like you said, traveling around the country, getting to know the individual regions around the country, learning about their fisheries and all that kind of stuff. It's a fun job. Get to play with all the toys and do a little bit of fishing, here and there, which is always a nice added perk. But yeah, I grew up in Southern California. We do a lot of saltwater-based fishing out here. I do a little bit of largemouth and things like that around the area. The lakes around here can get pretty impacted though. It's one of those situations where we do a lot of finesse style fishing, and that's kind of where the BFS stuff really kind of comes into play for us. But like I said, I do a lot of saltwater fishing as well. That's always a big perk of living in California. We've got plenty of saltwater fishing to do, bass, yellowfin, tuna, yellowtail, all that kind of stuff. So that's really kind of where I cut my teeth and started getting into the largemouth and freshwater stuff as I got a little bit older and had the ability to travel around a little bit more.
Nice, nice. Yeah, you're actually the second California native we've had on the show. We had last year we had TJ Fiera with Tenkara USA, and he was saying the same thing. He's like, man, it's really not that different where I'm at in California than it is in Alabama as far as the fishing. He's like, we got saltwater, we got bass. Like he says, opposite side of the country, but we do a lot of the same stuff. So that's cool. Well, tell me a little bit, man. I don't know. We've kind of mentioned bait finesse systems in passing, and maybe since you're from California, where my understanding is that's where that first started taking off here in the United States. I believe it originated in Japan, kind of came through to California, where I guess y'all got some clearer water and some more pressured fisheries. But just tell me in broad strokes what bait finesse systems, what a BFS rod and reel is, and what makes it unique compared to the tackle everybody's already got hanging up on their gear shelves.
So I mean, like you said, a lot of guys, are already using, ultralight spinning tackle. That's kind of been the standard for, finesse style fishing, pretty much around the country, not just California, And where the pressured fisheries kind of come into factor, is, California's a pretty populated place. You go to any of our lakes, even some of the nicer lakes in California, and any given day, weekday, weekend, doesn't matter. There's going to be guys out on that water, putting pressure on those fish. They've seen a lot of what we have to offer. They've seen all the Senkos in the world. They still produce, for sure. But you're looking for something a little bit different to, kind of give you an edge and kind of reignite those fish's interest, in what you're offering. The BFS system, like you said, originated in Japan, as the bait finesse system. So it's obviously, finesse application stuff. So small crankbaits, small soft plastics, small jerkbaits, small topwaters, things like that that aren't as intimidating to a bass, maybe a little bit different of a profile to them, something that seems a little bit more natural. The reason that, bait finesse differs from ultralight spinning tackle fishing are a couple of things. I think one of the biggest advantages in going towards the BFS system is the accuracy ability that you have and the control that you have with a bait casting style reel. Spinning tackle is great, when you've got light winds and, you're able to get that bait into the position that you need to because you don't have wind factoring into that line. It's great. But in the situation where most of us do have quite a bit of wind kind of moving through the area, or you're really trying to target a small pocket of water or a small target, you really kind of do need or want the control that bait casting or bait finesse reels can give you. So I like to kind of phrase it as, these the bait finesse system enables anglers to throw lures that they would normally be forced to throw on spinning tackle instead with bait casting tackle and getting the advantage of that accuracy. I think that's a really big factor in it.
Yeah, it's definitely playing with mine to simplify it for my local anglers. You can kind of throw crappie lures on your on, but feel like you're bass fishing. Like it's really fun and really unique. And like as I was fishing with it, I was like, man, I was just thinking of so many lures. Like the first thing I threw with it was just regular old Johnson Beetle Spin, like an eighth of an ounce Beetle Spin, which is a lure I love fishing with. I do a lot of canoeing, floating creeks, and Beetle Spins work awesome. And you got to throw them on spinning tackle. You're not going to throw a 1/16 ounce Beetle Spin, but suddenly you could do it. And it was like you were throwing a spinning bait on the big river or the lake, but here you were in this little creek, you know, fishing in 3 feet of water. But you just felt like you were doing the same type fishing that a lot of guys do just day in, day out. Like, you know, I was messing around throwing some little roadrunner jigs. I threw some crick hoppers with it, just really small, like you were saying, the crankbaits, the Strike King. I think they call them like a Bitsy minnow, like it's a little crappie crankbait. And it was awesome. And but then looking at it, like, you know, you can thumb the spool, like you got that star drag system right there. So it comes time to fight fish, like if you're up in tight quarters, like having I got this little the rod that I bought is I think a 6.5 foot light action. But you know, if you got to winch a fish out of cover quick, which is something that happens a lot, like I felt way better equipped with this than I do with my little 6 foot ultra light spinning rod. Like you felt like if you wanted to, you could kind of put the heat on him and keep him out of trouble. So it was really just fun fishing with it.
I mean, I naturally gravitate toward bait casting tackle anyways. And when I'm forced to, absolutely, spinning tackle's always there for you. But if I can pick up a bait caster and throw those smaller lures, it's a no-brainer. I'm definitely gonna do it. There are some things to know about it though, but before jumping into it, there's things that you got to learn. You do have to have kind of an experienced thumb, using traditional bait casting tackle. That's kind of where I would say to start out with. If you're a guy that's using spinning tackle primarily, over bait casting tackle, it's going to be a bit of a learning curve. I mean, it takes a little bit of experience to kind of be able to predict, how that bait is going to traverse through the air, preventing backlashes from happening, things of that nature. So there's a little bit more involved than just transitioning from ultralight fishing to bait finesse.
I would say in my case too, like now that you bring that up, I'm embarrassed to admit it, but I may or may not have bird's nested my very first cast terribly because I had some false confidence.
Same here.
Throwing a 7 foot medium heavy and you're throwing a 1/2 ounce something does not really adequately translate to a light action rod and an 1/8 of an ounce bait. It's a little different. Like you said, your thumb's got to relearn that groove too. So I'd say everybody out there looking at one, just because you've thrown a bait caster, like when you start throwing those really light baits on them, that's very different. Like approach that first, the first few casts, you should approach those cautiously.
Absolutely. I mean, where I kind of got used to it was fishing with the Daiwa's Tatula SVs. We came out with those reels. They're, the ultimate in backlash prevention. And you're able to throw really light lure weights. I mean, I was able to throw baits down to about an 1/8 ounce, weightless Senkos, things like that, cast incredibly well on an SV. Takes a little bit of time to kind of get used to it and, really figure out, what your optimal cast control dial settings should be, and all that kind of stuff. And once you get used to kind of throwing an SV style reel, I think that really kind of translates over to the bait finesse style system where you have that super lightweight spool there. It like I said, it kind of translates from one to the other. If you haven't fished an SV style reel, or heaven forbid, a DC style reel, I would recommend somebody, guys who are looking to BFS, do that. do that and, kind of get used to throwing those lighter lure weights, weightless Senkos and things like that on a bait casting style reel. Get used to how that feels or just familiarize yourself with it. From there, then you can start really jumping into BFS and being successful with it.
Well, you kind of already, we started segueing into talking about some of the technology specific to Daiwa. I know there's several folks now who are making BFS reels widely available here in the US. Y'all are one of them. Cast King is, I think, what Justin told me about when I first heard about it. What kind of sets the Daiwa BFS reels apart from the crowd?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a number of features. The reel that we sent you is the Tutula BFS 70 model. That's a unique reel in the BFS. It has, like I said before, that really lightweight aluminum spool, shallow capacity lightweight aluminum spool. That's paramount. You need to have an incredibly lightweight spool in order to counteract the effects of inertia. And that's something that I really try to explain to people is that, Daiwa's reels, we use science and physics. We don't use magic materials, computer systems, or microprocessors, things like that. We use physics. So the way that I like to kind of try to explain the necessity for an extremely lightweight spool design is like if you were to take a basketball and roll it on the ground versus a beach ball and roll it on the ground. Basketball is obviously going to go all the way across the court. Beach ball might make it a quarter of the way, right? Because basketball has more mass. It has that mass and the momentum to keep it moving, right? And that's what causes a backlash to happen. When you take that cast, that heavy spool is spinning very quickly. That lure on your line leaving that spool slows down rapidly. Okay. So the line leaving the spool slows down, but that spool, because it has the weight to it, wants to continue to spin. And that's what's going to cause a backlash. Conversely, the beach ball metaphor, it only goes so far, it doesn't have the mass. Same thing with the spool, it doesn't have the mass to want to continue to spin after the line ahead of it has begun to slow down. So you combine that super lightweight aluminum spool with the magnetic braking system in the palm side of the side plate, as well as the adjustability of that magnetic braking system, and you've got the best type of cast control that you can really get. So that's like one of the main features of that reel, that really nice lightweight aluminum spool. Now, to even take things a step further, on your BFS 70 model, you also have the T-wing system. So the T-wing system, I wish I had an example to show you guys here with me, but you can look it up on the Daiwa website, daiwa.us. All of our Tutula reels feature the TWS system. And essentially what that is, in comparison to a normal bait casting reel where they have a line guide that travels back and forth, that's just one opening going back and forth. When you're taking a cast, the line leaving the spool has to go like that to come out of that spool. So it's constantly rubbing up against that line guide, which causes friction, reduces your casting distance, etc. The T-wing system is dynamic. So it goes from that small aperture and opens up into a much larger opening. So the line, as it's leaving the spool, has a vast reduction in friction up against that level line, that line guide. So you've got cast control with the lightweight spool, you've got cast controllability, and then you've got a reduction in friction. So you've got basically everything that you need to try to maximize your casting distance. So I think those are the kind of the key features that make specifically the Tutula BFS 70 model unique in the BFS market, that low friction line guide and that lightweight aluminum spool combined with the magnetic braking system. And then we start talking about the PX BF 70 with the model that we haven't gotten to you yet. The PX BF 70, very, very similar. a little bit more waffling taken out of the spool on that model. So it's a little bit lighter. So you're able to get, again, a little bit less momentum, a little bit more cast control. But the other critical feature, other than what's on the Tatula model, is that it has what we call a free-floating spool. So that means that there isn't a shaft traversing through the pinion gear. Instead, the spool solely rests on a bearing in the left side plate and a bearing on the outside of the pinion. So you've got even less friction on the PX model. So a little bit more technology going into that reel. But I think those are the key features that make these reels so much more castable and enable anglers to get longer distance casts.
That's some really good information. And the first time I ever picked up a Tatula and saw that T-wing system, I was a fan of it, and it really in particular makes a lot of sense, I think, on a BFS reel. You talked earlier about that lightweight shallow spool. I will tell people, if you buy one, keep in mind that shallow spool means you do not have a lot of line capacity. I think mine says it takes like 50 yards of 6 pound fluorocarbon, and if you get hung and have to break off, that's, you don't have a lot left to work with. So that's something to keep in mind. Maybe keep a spool, and it's not something you're going to want to bomb casts out there with or anything. I mean, it's really kind of close quarters is what I was using it for. It was a lot of fun. What would be some of your tips? What do you pair something like that with? Like I kind of just picked up a Daiwa Crossfire. Like I said, it's 6.5 foot light action. How do people choose? And is it different if you're doing, say you want to use your BFS for panfish, you want to catch crappie, bluegill, maybe some big shell crackers, versus you want to use it for bass versus trout? What do people need to think about when it comes to pairing these reels with a good rod?
Well, I mean, the first thing you got to remember is, like you said before, you're fishing with light line. You're fishing with anywhere from 4, 5, 6 pound test. And if you're going to be fishing fluorocarbon, if you're going to be fishing braid, similar thing, you're going to be fishing 6, maybe 8 pound test. To go back a little bit further on that, that point that you made just a moment ago with a low line capacity, people might see that as a disadvantage, right? Because you're not getting the capacity that you're comfortable with. But what you got to remember is that line carries weight. Again, we're fighting the physics, keeping that spool as light as possible. So that's why you've got that limited capacity spool on there. If you add too much line to it, you're not going to get the advantage of it being so light. Now, that being said, with rods, the traditional style in Japan is a rod that is shorter in length than what we're typically used to seeing here. You're usually going to be fishing something a little bit less than 7 foot. The rods that we recommend are usually going to be somewhere around that 6'8", 6'6" mark. In general, there's two styles of bait finesse that originated in Japan that we've begun to bring over into the U.S. So they have what they call like vertical style fishing. So that's where you're fishing a bait on the bottom or near to it, or actually vertically jigging a bait. In a situation like that, regardless of whether you're doing that or a moving style bait, you're looking for a light power rod. Light power is where it's going to be at to get the optimal amount of flex. But with that vertical style presentation where you're fishing, a drop shot, a Nico, something along those lines where you've got to maintain that bottom contact, or you're trying to vertically work the water column, you're looking for something that has either a fast or preferably an extra fast action. So light power, faster, extra fast action, because you need to be able to have, you need the sensitivity. That's where, sensitivity comes from a lot of the time is the action of that rod. So light power, extra fast, if you can find it, a little bit shorter than 7 feet is going to be the optimal. That's going to give you the ability to get a nice even bend out of that rod when you're taking a cast, and keep consistent pressure on that lightweight lure as you're coming to that 45 degree angle when you're ready to let go. If you go too soft of a rod, if you go to like an extra light rod, it's going to be too much whip. And when you go to release, it's going to have too much force moving forward and you're going to result in a backlash. Conversely, if you're fishing with a heavier power rod, maybe a medium power rod, you go to take that cast. That lightweight lure is not going to have enough weight to bend that rod back and give you that slingshotting action to get that bait out and give you that consistent amount of pressure all the way through. So again, for that vertical presentation, light power rod, faster, extra fast action. That's kind of what you're looking for. And again, a little bit less than 7 foot. Can you get away with a 7 foot rod? For sure. Yeah, you're kind of bending that more towards the American style of finesse fishing. The other side of it is what they call a moving versatile. So moving versatile would be, like you said before, beetle spins, any kind of spinning bait, maybe micro chatter baits. There's some great micro chatter baits that have come out from Z-Man recently that I've played around with. Like those a lot. They cast really well. They've got just the right amount of weight. The blade's just big enough to get a really nice wobbling action, give it, that nice fluttering action. But with that style of fishing, when you're fishing a bait that is, or even a crankbaits, topwater too, you want to have, again, light power, incredibly critical. The action is even more critical for those. You're looking for a what Daiwa calls a regular action. If you look at our catalog, you'll see that most of our rods that are not a fast or extra fast, you'll see an R in the model number. That stands for regular. Most other brands will label that as a moderate action. Basically, what that means is that the rod has a bend at least to the halfway mark down the blank. So what that enables is you to get that really good flexible cast and apply consistent pressure to get that cast out and not cause a backlash. More importantly, that regular action, number one, allows that bait to look natural in the water, and it prevents you from pulling too quickly as the fish takes that bait in, which can obviously you can pull that bait away from the fish, or since you're fishing with smaller hooks, you could potentially pull that hook out of that fish's mouth or out of the fish's lip. Again, you're fishing small baits, you're going to end up skin hooking fish just barely. So you want to make sure that those lures that with those lures, you've got a rod that can absorb that style of fight with those smaller hooks. So again, 6'8", a little bit less than 7 foot, light power, regular action. That's going to be the optimal for any bait that's constantly moving through the water or the surface of the water.
Man, that was super, super in depth, and I think that'll be super helpful for some of our listeners who were specifically reaching out asking about, how do I choose a good BFS reel? How do I choose a good BFS rod? I'll weigh in real quick. This was my first introduction to BFS. I picked up a rod to go with it. I ended up with one of y'all's Crossfire CS series. I think it was the model 662LB, which is kind of right what you were saying, a 6.5 foot rod, light action, moderate fast. Supposedly the lure rating on it is in on mine, it's in grams. I guess that's kind of a holdover from the Japanese heritage, but I did the math and I think back of the envelope, it's about like a 1/16 to a 3/8 or a 1/2 ounce. And it fished really well. Like I throwed a Like I said, the beetle spins, throw to a rebel crick hopper, and then I've got some. You mentioned the Z-Man. I've been a big fan of like the little Z-Man, the small finesse Ned baits they have, like the TRD and the TRD crawl and stuff like that. And it did well. I mean, it was kind of like just regular bass fishing, but downsized. And like you said, I've noticed that. I live down in Baldwin County, Alabama, and here on the Gulf Shores, man, our population has exploded. And everybody likes to fish. Alabama is one of the bass capitals of the world. People come down here, they want to fish. And if they don't have, the money to do the offshore game, they do the bass thing. And it turns into every little creek, pond, river, lake. People are hammering it. I live here on the river. I can tell you, especially with COVID, the fishing population exploded. My sleepy little river town just blew up during the pandemic. And I thought it would blow over, and I guess it has some, but yeah, as the pressure piles up, it's been nice to kind of throw something, a little finesse presentation, spool it with just nothing, just straight fluorocarbon. Really good feel, really good sensitivity. You get the the extra stealth factor from the line. I mean, everything, it just comes together really well. And as I was fishing with it, I'm partial to my ultralight spinning rod for doing a lot of that type of fishing. But I caught on pretty quick to it after I got that first bird's nest untangled. I had a pretty good time with it out there. So.
I mean, it's, you know, like I said, it's one of those things where, you know, like I said, I like throwing ultralight tackle. I really do. It's a lot of fun. It makes the fishing more fun. But you know, the disadvantage of it for me was when you get those windy conditions that come up and you're fishing that light braid line, man, that can really cause you to have a yard sale on light tackle lures. I mean, I can't tell you how many donations I've made to the trees on the bank, from where I'm trying to get to using spinning tackle. It's, they just don't have the same amount of control that you can get with bait casting tackle. So, you know, that factor combined with the accuracy, and again, you know, those shorter rod lengths that we recommend, the other factor, the other reason for that is, you know, when you're finesse fishing, and like you said, you're fishing in more generally more populated areas, or for fish that have seen all kinds of lures, you know, you're in an area where you're trying to find places that are harder for the general population to get to. Generally, those locations are going to have a lot more vegetation, overhead, up against the bank, all that kind of thing. So you really need the accuracy to put those baits into those tougher spots to get to. And I think that's a major strength that BFS can give people once they kind of master the castability of it.
Well, and it's definitely, it's not just a shorter rod being more accurate, but as you were talking about brush and getting away from the crowd, yeah, if you're doing a little bushwhacking to get away from, you know, the regular Joes who down here in Alabama, every bridge has a worn out dirt spot next to it where people fish off the bridge piling. And then sometimes there's a little cattle trail that goes 20, 30 yards back in the woods. But a lot of times if you want to really get to the good fishing, you got to do a little bushwhacking to get back there. And a shorter rod, 6.5 foot rod, is better than a 7.5 foot rod for stuff like that.
100%. Absolutely. Totally.
Well, Chris, man, I really appreciate you coming on the show. I've learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners have learned a lot. If folks want to learn more about Daiwa products, specifically the BFS stuff, where's a good place to go for more information?
We got a lot of really cool stuff coming out pretty soon as well, in the BFS market. We've got some our BFS reels already up on the website. If you guys want to learn more about that, check it out, daiwa.us. The reels will be under the freshwater bait casting category, so check the information out there, and keep an eye out to see what comes out at ICAST. I think you guys will be excited.
There we go. We will be at ICAST. We will make a stop by that booth. And
Please do.
Chris, if you ever make your way down here to the hot, muggy southeast, look me up. We'll go fishing.
Sounds great.
All right, appreciate you.
Thanks.
And we're gonna take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by Visit Mississippi. If you're looking for a beautiful state that's packed with outdoor attractions, check out Mississippi. Of course, you know about the Mississippi River, but there are lots of great rivers for paddling throughout the state. Coastal Mississippi's waters are perfect for deep sea fishing or exploring the state's five uninhabited barrier islands. You'll find national forests with campgrounds, trails and recreational sites, 25 parks, and wildlife management areas too. Whatever you like to do in the great outdoors, you can do in Mississippi, where wanderers are welcome. Plan your adventure at visitmississippi.org/outdoors. All right, guys, we're back rounding out this week's report. We're checking in with Drew Morgan over at East Alabama Fly Fishing. Drew is one of our several guides that fishes out there on the Tallapoosa River, which is just a river that I've fallen in love with here in the past year. Drew, what's the Tallapoosa looking like this time of the year?
Hey, Nick. Good talking to you, and thanks for having me back. We are in full swing of summer, of course. It's you know, when you walk around the blacktop at Walmart or whatever, it's hot, but you know, the fishing's been good on the river. Normally it's in the summer. Where we like to fish, there's a little bit of thermal protection because of Lake Wadawi upstream, so water feels good, and It's been a good summer. Been good numbers of fish. So yeah, been good.
It sounds good, man. I know when we was there last summer, it was really nice. Like the temperature out there on Lake Martin, the surface temperature was like up in the 90s. And I may have told you this story, but like last year I was out there fishing on a dock at a little Airbnb place that my buddy had, and sun come up and it got hot. And I said, well, man, I'm gonna jump off this dock. I'm gonna swim for a minute, cool off. And instant regret. Like soon as I hit the water, I was like, oh, this is nasty. Like 90-degree lake water. And but then we had a little float planned, and yeah, the Tallapoosa, man, was cool. Like it was nice. It had some current to it. It was clean. Very different experience. Like big enough river that you had some wind on it. That's something for me this time of the year. A lot of times, you like to get up in the little creeks, but down here our creeks just fill up with yellow flies and horse flies and all kind of nasty, and you don't get a breath of air, through the canopy. So being out on a big river this morning, I was out on the Tensaw. You catch a breeze, and then there you could wade and catch the breeze, and it was really pleasant. So sounds like a good place to be.
Oh, you're exactly right. There's always a breeze, and the water's cool or cooler, refreshing, clean, like you said, no pollution, very little trash. I've never put on bug spray. I've never put on bug spray when I've been out on that river, and I can't remember the last time I've ever bitten by a bug out there, because it's nice. So there are bugs, but they're just, I guess, the breeze, mosquitoes and yellow flies and stuff, it just keeps them away. So it's nice, man.
See, you got to be careful saying stuff like that. You've never put on bug spray, because now everybody in Baldwin County is going to want to move up there, hang out with you.
I grew up in Dothan, Alabama, and I mean, gnats and mosquitoes were always a thing. I'm sure you probably have folks listening that identify with that. But up here in East, I mean, I'll say, man, up here in East Alabama, I mean, we have a lot of flies, but there's not a lot of gnats and stuff. So there's mosquitoes, of course. But anyway, yeah, it's nice to be.
It's definitely different once you get up there, especially once you jump up and you hop above the fall line on the Piedmont. Like something I've noticed is down here, you got to be really on your game and just get comfortable with the idea of water moccasins. And I know y'all have them up there, but it's very different. Like it's not nearly as nerve-wracking wading up there, because down here is not if you're going to see one, it's how many did you see? And then how many did you not see?
Wow. No, I mean, we see them every now and then, but not often. So
Well,
it is different. It is surprising how crossing the fall line and getting up in the Piedmont just changes everything from climate to bugs and animals. So for sure.
yeah, all the way down to different fish species. What's the so what's here in the summer? We've had you on. I think we had you on back in the fall, winter. We've had you on in the spring, and I think this is probably the first time we've ever done on the show. We got 250 something episodes. This is probably the first time that we've talked about summertime fly fishing on the Tallapoosa River. What's that look like this time of the year?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great time of year. It's what everybody thinks about when they think about fly fishing for bass. And I mean, certainly I think the best chance of catching real big fish probably are, winter and spring, but you can't beat just catching a bunch of fish on a popper in the summertime. I mean, it's a great topwater river. There's my theory, this is not scientific, but there does seem to be a lot less shad and bait fish in the river in the summer. And so these fish, almost all the fish we catch, have crayfish in their bellies. You can see the antenna coming out of the gullet. But they just hit a topwater popper. And so these fish are eating crayfish, and then they're eating terrestrial stuff on the surface. They're looking up and looking down. And they don't seem to mind doing both. They're so opportunistic. If a meal comes by, especially this time of year, especially the red-eye bass, if there's one there primed, ready to eat, and you put a well-placed cast and in its ambush zone where it's sitting waiting, it'll probably eat it. And it'll probably happen as soon as it lands on the water. Saturday, I had a wading trip, and we had a fish. I mean, the popper landed, a split second later, a red-eye jumped And I'm not kidding you. Probably a foot and a half out of the water to try to eat it. We missed it. A lot of times when they jump out of the water like that, the fish misses the popper and you don't hook them. But it was pretty neat to see a bass jump that high out of the water to eat a popper. So, yeah, I mean, that's what we always start with in the summertime. Really probably begin in early May. We'll start with topwater because that's just what everybody – unless you just really love streamer fishing, which there's some people out there, and I love streamer fishing. I like streamer fishing. But to me, if you can catch them all day on a popper, that's what I like to do. And I think that's what most people come fish with us want to do, just because you can see everything. You can see the tapes. And so we always start with poppers, you know, or topwater bugs. Earlier in the year, so earlier in the summer, they tend to not like the popper as much. They'll like a little smaller, buggier looking things like a hopper pattern or some kind of big chubby Chernobyl variation, which is just a foam fly with long legs. But as you get in the summer, they tend to like poppers. And on the Tallapoosa, the fish do seem to like the commotion and the pops. You know, you talk to some smallmouth folks when they fish poppers and they don't pop them. They just let them drift. But, for whatever reason, the fish on the Tallapoosa, if you don't pop it, you might not get a bite. They like the commotion. And so, yeah, probably beginning like mid to late May, the popper bite really comes on strong. And, I mean, it's a lot of fun. Sometimes, you know, some days, if it's really bright and sunny, the popper bite may not be as strong, and then we'll try a streamer. But most days in the summer, we can catch fish on topwater poppers, which to me is just the classic fly fishing for bass pattern. So
it is definitely the funnest way to fish. And I can say doing the Red Eye Slam last year, traveling and getting to fish for that species in a lot of different waterways, it blew my mind how aggressive they were. And I had people tell me that, you know, I was thinking, man, little 6-10 inch bass, like, you know, at first I was thinking small poppers and delicate presentations and, you know, cause down here you get largemouth bass in little streams and stuff like that. And man, they could be spooky. Like it's easy to scare one in the creeks down here. Like you got to downsize your baits. And I had some guys tell me, even you know, like some conventional guys, they're like, man, don't be afraid to rip a big buzz bait over them. I'm like they're aggressive. Like they'll hit something big. And, like you said, big takes, you know, small fish, big take, jump yeah. out the water. Super exciting. Like you weren't ever. I've watched a lot of largemouth bass down here sip at topwater poppers, you know, almost look like the pictures you see where trout come up for a mayfly. Like they just barely take it. They're just lazy. Lazy is not an adjective that I would use to describe a Tallapoosa bass for sure.
Yeah, no, those Tallapoosas are really aggressive fish. Now the bigger spots will sip it a little bit more. It's funny, sometimes you're used to seeing the Tallapoosa bass or you know, we call them red eyes too still, I guess, but the Tallapoosa bass, they're pretty aggressive. The times when the bigger spots do take a popper, you barely even notice it. The popper just kind of disappears and then you set the hook and you realize that's a bigger fish. You think it'd be opposite, but it's not. And I'll say this on the Tallapoosa. I'll tell people, like, if you're going out there fishing, don't be afraid to use bigger topwater baits. They do seem to like bigger baits or bigger flies with bigger profile. Like in the summer, we use size 4 poppers, which the profile of a size 4 popper is pretty big. And they seem to like that more than small stuff. Now, that being said, you know, I mean, there may be days where a smaller popper may work better, but I find the smaller poppers tend to catch too many bluegill, which I love bluegill. I love catching bluegill, but it's not necessarily the reason why we go fishing. So to me, the size 4 popper catches bass and it'll still catch a big bluegill, you know, a big bluegill or a big red-breasted sunfish can eat a size 4 popper, but it kind of keeps the little panfish off. So you're not constantly taking little tiny brim off. They'll still peck at it, but you know, it's a good size just for the bass. So that's an important thing to think about. I mean, if you're just getting into it, you may be real happy with, you know, catching whatever bites, but once you do it for a while, and you want to try to target the bigger fish, I like to try to keep the smaller fish off. Because here's the thing, and some of your listeners may know this, but you cast a little popper out to a good spot, and you've got some little brim coming up pecking at it. If it's a real small popper, you're going to hook those little brim, and you're going to have to pull it in. Well, the moment you hook a little brim and you pull it in, you're probably spooked everything in that spot. There could have been a really nice bass in that spot that didn't get to it first. The little brim got to it first. If you use a bigger popper, the little brim can just peck at it, but they can't get the hook. And that pecking at it a lot of times will get the attention of the bass. So I try to tell people, and it's hard for, you know, and I get it, it's hard, but using a size 4 popper, I tell people, hey, don't set the hook on the pecs, right, on the little brim pecs. You be disciplined and let it sit there. And a lot of times, if you let little brim peck at it, a bass will come and get it a few seconds later. So that's something I tell people. And I think the other thing, too, that I see a lot of people do a lot of times is they'll, especially people who are used to fishing for trout, they'll want to set the hook immediately when they see any kind of strike on a popper, whether it's a tiny, you know, brim or bass. They'll just immediately set the hook, you know, a big dramatic rod set, you know, and rip that fly out of there. Most of the time, you don't hook up, even if it's bass. Like, let's say you have a Tallapoosa bass come up and it hits your popper, and you set the hook immediately. A lot of times, I would say 75% of the times, you're going to miss that fish. My theory is I don't think the bass eat it at the initial strike. I think what they do is they come up and submerge it with the side of their face and then eat it, you know, and then that probably only takes maybe a second, maybe less. And the way I know that is because there's a lot of times when I have people set the hook immediately, they'll foul hook fish on the side of the face and hit me one day. I was like, well, that's what's happening. These fish are coming up and they're submerging what they think is a bug or whatever, and then they're eating it on a walk. But when you're popper fishing, especially on the Tallapoosa, and this may be true for a lot of places, but my experience with Tallapoosa, you know, if you can be disciplined, and really you don't really even have to set the hook very much. You definitely don't have to use a rod set. Really, all you want to do is you just want to pull the line tight, get you a nice solid little strip set, pull the line tight. The fish is going to turn down and try to get down back down to its hiding spot. So it'll hook itself a lot of times when that happens. The nice, you know, firm little strip set, pull the line tight. Then once you know you have the fish, you can put a bend in the rod just to fight the fish. But that's a big tip, especially for people just getting into fly fishing. It's hard to do. It's hard to not set the hook immediately.
I think, man, that is good advice, whether you're fly fishing or conventional fishing. I would say, you know, give them a little time. And then, like you were saying, like, you don't have to have a big dramatic hook set a lot of the times, especially nowadays, you know, like people fishing with braid and fluorocarbon and faster rods and stuff like that. You know, bass mouth on a bass isn't that tough. Like you don't need that big hook set a lot of times to get a hook into the jaw of a bass.
Yeah, and I would say this too. I would say with a rod set, especially with a fly rod bends a whole lot more than what people realize. And so if you do a rod set, there's a couple of things working against you. One, you're moving your arm, right? You think you're really setting it, but that rod's bending. And really what you're not setting the hook much at all, really. And there's a little bit of a delay. It's too long. Right. So there's a lot of play there. I always tell people fly fishing for bass is a whole lot more. It's a whole lot closer to saltwater fly fishing than it is cold water fly fishing. A lot of the same tactics apply. I always keep my rod tip in the water when popper fishing, really popper and stringer fishing for bass. My rod tip's in the water. I don't want any slack in my line. Slack is your enemy, because if you do get a strike, it's just going to, you're not gonna be able to set the hook. It's hard to strip set when you got slack in your line. And then, you know, if it's a sunny day, as far as where to cast, I mean, you do want to, generally on the Tallapoosa, we have a lot of ospreys and a lot of eagles out there. We see ospreys and bald eagles all the time. And if it's a clear sunny day, especially if the water's clear, I mean, generally it's going to be tougher to catch fish out in the middle of the sunny places. Those fish just over time, the ones that get eaten by eagles don't breed, right? And so over time, the fish that breed and have offspring are the fish that stay in the shade. So if it's sunny, you definitely got to target shade. Now, if it's cloudy, it's game on. I mean, if it's cloudy, I mean, you can catch fish anywhere out in that river. But shade is definitely your friend. Yeah, you know, and I can think the other tip I can tell people is generally, if you can see, and this may be true for other places, but again, I mainly know the Tallapoosa. If you can see the bottom, it's probably not going to be a fish there. I think that's a lot different than trout fishing. But if you can see the bottom of the river, you're probably not going to catch anything. There's just those fish know that, you know, if it's that shallow, they can be seen by eagles and ospreys, and they want to stay hidden. But if you can find a good shady spot with some good depth where you can't see the bottom, and you can drop a popper in there, I mean, it's probably going to have something come bite it. So that's one more thing, and I keep throwing these things out, but another tip I'll say is your landings matter. The landing of the popper matters. So as you're practicing casting the popper, and sometimes you can't control this. If you're trying to cast under a branch or a bush or something, sometimes you have to tighten up your loop to get your fly under a bush, and that's fine. You know, you got to do what you got to do sometimes. But if you can, it's really best to let your loop open up a little bit, so you have a softer landing, because the more natural the landing of the popper, the softer the landing on the water, the more reaction strikes you'll get, because it looks more natural. There's some things to help you with that. You can lengthen up your leader. You can open up your loop on your cast and stuff. But I guess my main point is that popper fishing seems really simple. Seems like you just cast out a popper and pop it a few times. But I have found that there are some tips and things that you can learn and do to really increase the amount of strikes you get on a popper, more so than what people think. So, you know, and that's why I like it. It's a little bit more up to it than what some people think about when they think popper fishing.
For sure. No, well, I think that's a really good deep dive on popper fishing on the Tallapoosa in the summertime. I feel ready for our annual vacation that me and my buddy take up that way. If folks is interested, make a trip up there if they want to see it for themselves. What's a good place to get a hold of you, Drew?
Yeah. I mean, we would love to take you out. You know, you can come do a DIY trip, but I promise you, you know, you'll have a better chance, more of a chance if you come fish with us. We'd love to show you out. And we've got some places on the river that we can get to that where you'll see less people and less fishing pressure. So you can go to www.eastalabamaflyfishing.com, and there's a form or a place there to book a trip. You can check out what we offer. You can email us at eastalabamaflyfishing@gmail.com. If you want to get in touch with us and ask us any questions, we love taking people out, whether you're a beginner just getting into it or you're experienced. Our rafts are super stable. It's a really fun way to fish the river, where you just get to sit on the front of a, or stand on the front of a drift boat, and we do all the work, and you just get to fish all day. You don't have to row, you don't have to paddle, you don't do anything. So we'd love to take you out and love the opportunity to do that. But, you know, yeah, Tallapoosa is a good river. It's great in the summertime. So get out there and enjoy it.
There we go, guys. Y'all definitely go check out Drew at East Alabama Fly Fishing. Drew, as always, good to have you on the show, sir. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, anytime, Nick. Thanks for having me.
This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Bucks Island. Is a family-owned and operated business since 1948. They have new pontoon boats, bass boats, bow riders, and aluminum boats for sale. They love trade-ins for boats and motors. They can rig your boat or ship your new motor anywhere in the United States. They provide boat service on all kinds of boats, even if they weren't purchased from Bucks. They have factory-trained and certified technicians. Visit them at 4500 Highway 77, Southside, Alabama, 35907 zip code, or give them a call at 256-442-2588. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, don't forget to text that code ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Again, just text ALFFR, that's Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, to 779-345-2918. Subscribe to our email list, and we'll send you the promo code via email. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Killer Dock. Killer Dock combines durability, function, and design to uniquely upgrade your entire dock experience. Visit killerdock.com to see more. Also by Southeastern Pond Management. Since 1989, Southeastern Pond Management has been a leader in pond and lake management services. Schedule an obligation-free consultation today. Call 1-888-830-POND or info@sepond.com. Also brought to you by Fish Bites. Whether you're hitting the sand with set rig or fishing the flats and marshes for speckled trout, redfish, and flounder, Fish Bites has something for you. Check out the full line of scented saltwater and freshwater baits at fishbites.com. Also by L&M Marine has something for everyone, from small hunting boats to pontoons to bigger bay and hybrid boats for the hardcore angler. You can visit them at 34600 Highway 59 in Stapleton, Alabama, or give them a call at 251-937-1380.